So this is the third day of this three-day retreat. Hopefully, as you're sitting here listening right now, and you remember perhaps where you were on Thursday evening, that somehow you can see there is a difference. You may not be a totally transformed human being, but perhaps the way you feel from 3 days of practice, and most importantly, your understanding, how you see things, especially in relationship to the topics of this retreat, is something that is apparent to you. So before we'll see what I get into. Anyhow, I have no idea what this is, but we'll take a look. Because I do want to spend a little time talking about the future, but maybe some of this is about the future. So what is your hope or prayer for us when we leave the retreat? Well, I come from a long lineage, 2,600 years going back to the Buddha, that only has one hope. Is that people will wake up from their self-induced, self-created suffering and begin to understand that they can live freely, free of suffering, free of delusion, free of self-centeredness, and together we can create a world that reflects wholesomeness rather than unwholesomeness. But again, what is your prayer? My question to this person is, what is your prayer? Because that's really most important for all of us, is what is our intention upon leaving retreat? How do I want to show up in life? Am I just going to go back to my home, my life, and do it the way I've always done it? Or has these 3 days here, not just the practice and the teachings you've been doing, but just stepping back from your life, getting some perspective on it, can you see that you can do it differently? Relate to things differently, deal with things differently, be a different kind of person, and are you committed to doing that? That's really up to each of us. So again, how do you handle working, being in a restrictive and demeaning work environment where you feel imprisoned? We talked about this yesterday. Well, how can you cultivate a happy mind when you're anything but? You're not happy because your mind's not happy. And so the whole practice, the whole practice of the Buddha Dharma is not simply to be endlessly engaged, working with, working through, fighting, struggling with afflictive mind states. It is primarily about the cultivation of a wholesome mind. This is where we need to be putting the primary energy of our life. And again, because Western psychology is primarily attuned and interested in afflictive mind states, pathological mind states, and getting rid of them, it does not have any idea about what a wholesome mind state is, as well as that the primary purpose of life is the cultivation of these wholesome mind states. So please understand that the happy mind comes out of, is the result of. It's not like you go around going happy, 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 happy. I want to be happy. I'm going to be happy. That's like creating a park on a contaminated, poisonous site, We want to transform this mind, and we transform it by cultivating wholesomeness, patience, kindness, compassion, mindfulness, generosity, love. You know what I mean? These are the... When you cultivate wholesome mind states, you will be happy. If you cultivate unwholesome mind states, you will be unhappy. It's really that simple. So don't make it too complicated. Again, we spend a lot of time these days really looking at, forget my ideas about the kind of person I am. When I just watch my mind all day, what do I learn about myself? What am I cultivating? And what you're cultivating is in your thoughts, in your emotions, in your stories. Okay, this is what you're cultivating, no matter what you think you are, or no matter how you present yourself to life and to others. We have to get real here and look at our minds and go, this is my mind, right? And if I'm anything but happy, then it's time to start practicing. And again, you've spent 3 days learning about that. Where does apathy fall? Apathy is an unwholesome mind state. Apathy is what? Not caring? Yeah. Because again, in Buddhist psychology, wholesome, unwholesome has to do with what a wholesome mind state is, a mind state that supports our awakening. An unwholesome mind state is one that does not support it or sabotages it. That's a good criteria, you see? You know, if you want to get somewhere in life, well, anything that supports you getting there supports that. Anything that prevents you from getting there or takes you away from there doesn't support it, right? Can you see? I mean, it doesn't matter what it is, you know, whether you're traveling somewhere. You know, you take the road and you take the right road and you stay on the road, it'll get you there. Anything, you know, off is either a side trip or it's a wrong side. It's a wrong trip. Is that clear? Apathy, doubt. These are in Buddhist psychology, these are all looked into. But not caring. I mean, you didn't grow up not caring. Apathy is something like a depression that has settled on the mind, like doubt, doubting oneself, doubting the path, doubting that one can change. And it comes, unfortunately, out of ignorance. Ignorance means not knowing the truth about how things are. The truth is how our mind is, how our life is as we've said over and over again, has been created by causes and conditions. But none of it is fixed. None of it is set. There's nothing permanent in Buddhism at all. So everything is subject to change. Change the causes and conditions, your mind will change. If you're apathetic, you doubt that. Apathy is doubt. It's like a person, you know, who's got $1 million in the bank goes around saying, "Oh, I'm so poor. Poor me. I don't have anything." Right, that's distorted. You know, Buddhism teaches us that we're all Buddhas. We all have this awakened nature. It's right here. The practice is manifesting it. The practice is stop manifesting the opposite. Again, why do we do that? Because we're ignorant. We don't know better. We're like children. Shanti Davis says, we're like children, you know. We want to be happy, but the things we do in our life only create unhappiness for us. We want to stop suffering, and yet we do things that just continue our suffering. So, you know, having a path is very important in this life. Having a teaching, having a teacher, having a way, having an end goal, having the support of community. These things are all very important if one is really seeking to transform, to change. As a Buddhist student, what can I do to alleviate human suffering around the globe? Animal, children, innocent civilians are dying now, right? So again, As a student of the Buddha, we have to follow his directions. in the face of this kind of overwhelming suffering that is so omnipresent in the world, we have to stop thinking, I just got to run out there and do something. People have been running out and trying to do something forever. And yet, the suffering of the world doesn't decrease, does it? Why is that? See, we have to, like we learned earlier, Four Noble Truths, we have to go, there's suffering. Well, why is there so much suffering in the world? Why is the world the way it is? Well, the answer is what? Causes and conditions. Right? The world we have today has been created by causes and conditions. Who creates those causes and conditions? Human beings. If we want to change the world, we have to change the causes and conditions, which means we have to change human beings. The way they think, the way they act, the way they see each other, the way we relate to each other. Well, how do you do that? Well, where does it begin? First, you've got to look at yourself. How am I? Do I live in an enlightened way? Am I free of anger, hatred, fear, despair? You know, if we're going to show up in the world and really be of benefit to people, you know, what do you have to offer? If you really want to make a difference. Again, if a person is thirsty, you give them a glass of water. Good. Person's hungry, you give them food. Good. Person's sick, you do everything you can to give them medicine. All right, now what? Now they have enough to, you know, now their thirst is satisfied, their food is satisfied, and they're healthy. So now they can suffer along like everybody else who already is like that. I mean, that's the truth. Now, again, it doesn't mean helping people is wrong. It's wonderful that people want to help each other. But the person said, as a Buddhist student, What is missing in the helping that so many people offer, all the NGOs and non-governmental organizations and nonprofits and blah, blah, blah? You know, what's missing? The human transformation is missing. Right? Is that clear? You know, and so for those who want to look more deeply, we have to understand, you know, I mean, even the worst things in the world, you get people healthy, you stop, and all of a sudden you right there, they're this, they're that, you rise them up, you know, and 5 years later they're slaughtering somebody else. Is that not true? Why is that? Because the fundamental problem, which is in the human mind, in the human heart, has not been addressed. The world does not lack resources. The world does not lack policies and programs to feed and house and, you know, stop war. I mean, we know how to do everything, don't we? Why don't we do it? Because of ignorance. Because of greed. Because of hatred. Right? Because of, you know, we don't feel connected. We don't feel, you know, we're destroying our beautiful planet. Why? Because we see it as something separate than ourselves. We don't see the interconnection. So, it is the Bodhisattva practices their own awakening and transformation so they can really bring benefit to the world. Do you want to be somebody who put band-aids? Or do you want to be a healer? And that's a question for all of us. My now deceased wife was a Vietnam nurse who was spat at, cursed, and called a baby killer. I felt her pain and suffering and in turn anger at these protesters organized by the SDS through causes and conditions put in motion 50 years ago. That pain and suffering reverberates through us in society to this day. How do I extinguish this pain and move forward and simultaneously not dishonor her memory, honor, and service? How do we reconcile our own past with present-day karmic consequences? You know, what this reminds me of, there was many years ago, Thich Nhat Hanh, many people familiar with Thich Nhat Hanh, I'm sure you are. He did a retreat for Vietnam vets, and there was one vet who said to him, "I am that baby killer. I killed so many." He was a gunner on one of those gunships. I mean, he said, "I killed. Just look at children, women, old people, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50. And this guy become, you know, come back, come on." So he was on the other side. You know. And he was an addict, you know, alcohol, he had gone through everything. And he was still greatly in pain. And what Thay said to him was, you know, like you would imagine, he said, "You are the product of your causes and conditions." Right? You know, there was you, there was the army, there was the training, there was the whole politics, you know, the whole thing created the causes and conditions, personal, environmental, that brought you to that point, that allowed you to kill indiscriminately, right? And he said, and that was going on all sides. And so his first response was, well, like we've talked about, causes and conditions. Causes and conditions created that whole situation. War, anti-war, anger, hatred. It was on all sides. Everybody was caught up in it. But we have to have understanding. And as we've said over the days, you don't hate the stick. We don't hate the person, the people. We hate what? Hatred. We hate hatred, if you want to hate something. But then Thich Nhat Hanh said a very interesting thing to him. He said, "Those children you killed, you cannot do anything for. I mean, you have to come to peace and reconciling with yourself, so you understand your own causes and conditions that brought you into that situation where killing became possible." He said, "But right now, there are many children in harm. You can help them. You know, you can help them." How do I not dishonor the memory of service of your wife? Look deeply into the causes and conditions that create hatred, intolerance. Honor her by working hard to change those causes and conditions. Is there any better way to honor someone than to end the suffering that caused them suffering? If we nurture hatred in our hearts for those who hate us, what are we doing? We are perpetuating hatred in the world. It will never end. I mean, the Buddha said 2,600 years ago, violence will never end by violence. Hatred will never end by hatred. You end hatred by love. You end violence by nonviolence. Apple seeds don't create pear trees. Right? Only pear seeds create pear trees? How could hatred create love? How could intolerance create tolerance? It's illogical. If there are things that have happened in the past that we see were terrible, and there are endless things in the human history, you know, let's do it differently. And it's done first within me. I mean, this is, you know, there's a lot that could be said here, but this is, we have to understand what, you know, do I just, it's like impersonally, you know, how do I want to show up in life? Do I just want to perpetuate, you know, resentment and anger and frustration, you know, in terms of our topic? Is that what I want to continue to perpetuate in my life? Even if I got it from my family, even if I grew up in an angry household, even if I was abused, even about, you know, all right. But going forward, you know, how do I want to show up in this world? What do I want to bring into this world? Does that make sense? You know, we have to be clear what we're doing. But we have to look deeply. What is the cause? Why did people spit in this? Because angry and sense of people feel disconnection. How does the parent of an alcoholic or addict use the understanding of cause and conditions and not feel responsible for their shattered life? So, this is not an unknown reality. How does a parent, or even how does an alcoholic or addict use their understanding? So they don't blame themselves for their shattered life. Causes and conditions. What does that mean? Not one cause, not one condition. Causes and conditions. Many causes and conditions, right, affect us. Where does it begin? We might say, well, major cause and condition in my life were my parents. Of course, they were the creatures of their causes and conditions. So don't leave out your grandparents and your great-grandparents. You know what I mean? It's on. It's so many. And causes and conditions are all our experiences, all the people in our life, all causes and conditions, choices we made, choices we didn't make, so many causes and conditions, right? I mean, you see what I'm saying? You could just go on and on and on, as well as each of us is different, right? Three children grow up in the same home, all different. Children bring different things. Children respond to different things. So many causes and conditions help us understand, you know, or I should say begin to understand why things unfolded the way they do. In Buddhism, they say only a Buddha, you know, one of the so-called qualities of the mind that awoke in the Buddha in his great enlightenment was omniscience. Okay? Supposedly the Buddha, if we're to believe the text, had the ability to see all the causes and conditions that have created every person in every situation. So therefore, he had an incredible capacity to help people because he could see all the causes and conditions. He had omniscience. Most of us aren't there yet. Okay? So we have to understand that even when we try to put it together with, you know, and see cause and conditions, we may be missing 90% of them. So we have to, you know, be a little humble in our understanding. It's just interesting with this, because a lot of, you know, it's like, how does a parent of an, it's like, you know, we as parents are not perfect, are we? We as parents have our issues, have our causes and conditions, which we brought to the situation unconsciously. You know, if you as a parent, it's sort of like we talked about yesterday, if you as a parent said, I got a child, I'm going to do everything I can to ruin this child's life so when they grow up, they'll be miserable and turn to addiction. Okay? If that was your intention, well, then you ought to be shot. But that was a little hyperbole there. Do you see what I'm saying? But that's never the case. Right? I mean, most parents are doing their best with who they are and what they have. Anybody here have children? Anybody here have children who have grown up? Have you been able to control their every move? Were you able to choose all their friends? Were you able to follow them around and make sure, you know, all day long, even when they were teenagers, that they were doing exactly what you wanted? Anybody able to do that? Yeah. You know, lots of causes and conditions in this world. Right? And so it's a little kind of arrogant, you see, or a little deluded to somehow think, you know, I am the primary variable in my child's life. Because we know, even that's not the case. We know, you know, there are many cases, you know, children who grew up in horrible circumstances. You know, now they call them resilient child, you know. I mean, children who grew up in horrible circumstances, you know, one kid's an addict and he goes to jail and he spends his life in jail, and the other one, you know, has a scholarship to Harvard, right? And you're like, you know. So there's lots of variables there. And to kind of, yeah. So, you know, in Buddhism, what we want to do is take full responsibility for ourselves. You know, am I willing to take full responsibility for myself? For the way I am right now and the way I want to be? I mean, if you're going to take full responsibility for something, you might as well take some full responsibility for something that you have at least a possibility of being responsible for. I mean, you know, here we have a little bit of a fighting chance. But even then, it's not that easy because it's so impermanent. It's so unknown. Does anybody here know exactly how today is going to unfold? No. Does anybody here know what their next 100 thoughts are going to be? And you go, I don't have a clue. See, in truth, the whole thing's out of control. The whole thing's out of control. You have no idea what's going on in the world. Right? Do you? I'm not going to tell you because you're in retreat. But you have no idea. Right? It all could have changed. This could be the only oasis left. It could be like one of those futuristic science fiction things. You know what I mean? It could be. I don't want to scare you, but you know. We don't know. And yet we're going to blithely... You know, I often joke with people, you know, who are so controlling. I say, you know, every night you go to bed, you have no idea what you're going to dream, do you? And yet you fall asleep. You have no idea. Good dream, bad dream, right? And you truth, we have no idea whether we're going to wake up or whether we're going to die in our sleep. People die in their sleep all the time. And yet we go to sleep. Every time you drive, I'm just trying to let you know, this whole thing's out of control. Practice allows us in this groundless, impermanent, ever-changing world to have a ground, to be stable, to live at ease in the midst of this unknowing. How, when, where, and to whom are offerings of dana given? Somebody, do we do it? We've done that. Okay. How can you have compassion and care for others without absorbing their energies, sadness, anxiety, anger, etc.? Wow. This is another retreat. And there are in the Buddhist traditions practices just about this. I mean, there is nothing that we're going to deal with in your life that has not already been dealt with. That is the wonderful thing in this life of finding a path. You know, I mean, you know, there are many paths in this life. I only know the Buddha's path. But I know for me, it's wonderful to find a path, or, you know, that's 2,600 years old, that has a very profound psychology. You know, I mean, the whole thing's there. You know, human beings are not that different, right? Outer circumstances are different, but the same internal is the same, more or less. Okay. So, obviously, if we are going to engage, compassion in Buddhism means to engage, you know, compassion is not just empathy. Empathy means I feel your pain. Compassion is I want to free yourself from your suffering. That's compassion. It's not empathy. Empathy brings us, connects us to the suffering, but it's an active thing. Okay. So, you know, I think people who, when they're in the presence of suffering, their own suffering and others' suffering, and get overwhelmed with it, sadness, anxiety, anger, it's because they don't know how to move from the connection with the afflictive suffering, afflictive mind state, to doing something. Right. It's like with anger. Anger just arises. It's a spark. Everybody here who says, remember we talk, you know, just anger, it just comes up. That's all it does. It flickers up. That's all that does. It just flickers up. Somebody says something, doesn't say something, and in that moment, you feel a rush of what? Anger. Frustration. Resentment. It's a flicker. It's a whoosh. Then what happens? We grab onto it. See, anger is like this. It comes and it goes. Everything's impermanent. It comes. And then if you leave it alone, it'll go down. But we stay angry because we cultivate anger. Okay? Because we do what? Repeat and repeat and repeat. And repeat. Tell the same story over and over. I can't believe it. I can't believe it. I can't believe what she did. I can't believe what it did. I can't believe he said this. I can't you know. And people are still doing this about their childhoods. I can't believe I was treated that way in my childhood. I mean, you're, you know, 60 years old and you still can't believe it? I mean, what's it going to take? I mean, it happened. You were there. I mean, is that true? I mean, you were there. It happened. You know, it's believable. You were there. You're a witness to its believability. Now what? You know, now what? It happened. Yeah, good things happen. Bad things happen. Wonderful things happen. Terrible things happen. That's life, isn't it? You know, unless you live in Disney year-round, right? That's life. Some of us, because of causes and conditions, or whatever good karma, we have more on the positive side, right? Some of us, because of causes and conditions, we've had more on the afflictive side, right? Is that not true? We all have different. But the truth is, everything that has happened in the past is past. Is that true? I mean, it's so simple. Everything that has happened in the past is gone. And not because of anything we did. That's just the way it is. And the challenge always for us is, how do I want to show up this moment? How do I want to be going forward? If you hold on to things, again, when we say, you know, how can I not absorb? It's because we don't realize it, you're absorbing it. Because in the presence of suffering, you are doing something that is internalizing it within yourself. That's why the suffering is absorbed. You know, it's not like there's a thing called suffering and suffering's trying to stuff itself into you. You see how we talk in this crazy way. Crazy meaning it's like psychotic. It's not based in reality. You know, it's not like this person who's suffering is kind of just taking their suffering and smearing it all over me. Am I right? You know, all was happening, we are in the presence of somebody who is suffering. Our empathy connects us to them. And like Shanti Deva said, the only question is in that moment is what? Is there something I can do to help, or is there nothing I can do to help? If there's something I can do to help, then do it. If there's nothing I can do to help, then I understand that. Causes and conditions, there's nothing I can do. Am I missing something? Help me out. I mean, am I missing something? This is ancient wisdom. The retreat was called Cultivating the Mind of Patience and Acceptance. Can you say a little more about acceptance? I'll say a little bit. You know, so again, acceptance, it's a good thing. A lot of people are into acceptance these days. A lot of times you run into people and you say, you know, what's going on? They say, well, I'm working on acceptance. Right? People are working on their acceptance these days. It's a good thing. As you've learned, like patience, acceptance is not something, it's not a virtue to be imposed from the outside in, from above to below, from the top down. Acceptance, when it's real, comes out of a deep understanding of the way things are. When you understand the way things are, you can accept it. It's like I was just saying, which, you know, which people found quite funny, when I said, you know, why is it decades later, you still cannot accept what happened to you in your childhood happened to you. And that your mother and your father were who they were. I mean, how can we not accept that? Right? And why were they the way they were? Because of their causes and conditions. They didn't like consciously decide this is how I'm going to be in life. No. They were just the unconscious products of their causes and conditions. And so they unconsciously acted out based on their conditioning with us. Is that clear? That's all that happened. When we understand that it's all causes and conditions, and stop, as I said yesterday, personalizing everything and making as if people are choosing to be their way. I mean, we have a president now that people are going, I can't believe he's the way he is. I mean, he is the way he is. Why is he the way he is? Because of his causes and conditions. And to just humble us if there are those people in this room who think, wow, I am so much better than him. And there are probably lots of people in this room, I am so much better than him. Such a better human being. I assure you, if you have been born into his family and grown up exactly the way he grew up, you would be just like him. That's humbling, isn't it? Because he also is the product of his causes and conditions. He's not acting. That's the way he really is. I mean, right? And that takes the personalization out of it. And again, we have to look deeply. Greed, self-interest, ignorance. You know, what are the causes that create somebody like that? Right? It's not the person, it's the afflictions inside them, the delusions inside them that need to be transformed. Or if not, the other alternative is to to do it the way the world does it. You know, what do we do about people that we totally disagree with? We kill them, right? We kill them. We lock them up. We disenfranchise. That's one way of dealing with it. The problem is. Anger only causes more anger. Violence only causes more violence. We're just cultivating that energy. And then it gets reversed. The ones who are on the bottom get on the top. The ones who are on the top get on the bottom. And then so acceptance means I understand. Some people don't like that because they go, does that mean I approve? No, it's not a moral judgment. It's a wisdom statement. Right? It's not like that's good as opposed to that's bad. So people go, oh, if I accept that, does that mean I condone it? No, but I understand why things occur the way they occur. Cause and effect. It's very scientific. Fact-based. Anger causes suffering. Other instances where anger is a valuable or positive. Again, anger is interesting. Again, from a, is there healthy anger? Obviously, what? You know, people who are oppressed get angry at being oppressed. It's kind of like it's unfair. That could be a good anger, mobilizes people. So, as I said earlier, anger arises in a situation. It arises. The problem is we get stuck in it and we live from it. So anger can be, you could be in a relationship with somebody and they do something and you feel angry. See, that we could just simply be, that's an alert. You know, that for some reason in that moment you're feeling something's not right. Okay? Something's right, not right. Okay? So it can be like a little alert. It doesn't have to move us to action from anger. See, that's the problem. We get angry and then we act from anger. And it's downhill from there, you see. But you can have anger, but and you can just be aware that it's arising in you. And it can be a little help to kind of look at the situation. Yeah, this is unfair. Now again, the problem isn't always out there. Sometimes the problem is me, my perception of unfairness. My focus on myself and not on the other. Perhaps the other is suffering. Well, that's an interesting thought. Perhaps the reason the person is acting this way is because they're suffering. You see? And we're supposed to be compassionate beings. You know, perhaps the other person is suffering right now. Maybe that's why they're saying this or not doing this. Maybe I need compassion for them. But usually we don't do that because we're only concerned about what? Me. Right? So, just the fact that anger has arisen doesn't necessarily our perception of the situation is correct. It may not be true. We may have a misguided perception. So, but if the anger alerts us, you know, we can maybe do some work on myself to look at this. You know, maybe I need to be more understanding, more compassionate. Understand that they have their causes and conditions. Like I said the other day, you know, we want everybody to be understanding to us. But we don't really see it's our job to extend that to anybody else. So again, anger, you know, there's a lot of injustice in the world. You know, so we would certainly if anger is an alert to go, hey, you know, this is unfair, you know. I don't have health care for my children. I don't have health care for myself. I'm working 3 jobs and have to spend 4 hours a day on a bus. I mean, is there something intrinsically unfair about that? Yeah. But again, if that person gets stuck in their anger and become an angry person, what's that going to do? Is that going to change the situation? No. Is it going to make their life even more difficult? So it's tricky. So again, anger is energetic. Anybody ever been angry here? How do you feel? Energized, right? You know, you could have just been lazing around, exhausted. Somebody does something and you're just whew. I mean, anger has energy. So that's why a lot of people kind of, you know, get addicted to it. It's a kind of energy. Or a lot of people, you know, they need to be angry about something to really get them to do. You know, there are better energies. Love is a good energy. Caring, you know, there are other energies that are very helpful. The question about the community building its own residential. I'll get. We're going to what time? 11:10. Okay, we have time. So any questions? So those are the questions that I had. Is there anything else from these 3 days of retreat, the talks, your own meditations, the guided meditations? Anything not clear going forward? Is that okay? Yeah, yeah. So you're saying when anger arises in you, it just kind of floods you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the question is, when anger comes up in me, it really floods me and sort of takes me over. And I'm afraid going home that even though I've learned a lot of good things here, I'm still going to be same old, same old. Yeah. I think what I've tried and hopefully the other people who've been doing the guided meditations have stressed is hopefully your big picture has changed. Okay. And you understand that your anger, even though it arises case by case, situation to situation, often comes because of a bigger unwillingness to accept life with understanding and people with understanding, to really understand that every situation, every person is a product of their causes and conditions. And that's why they're acting or doing the way they are. We have a bigger picture, a bigger context, so when something happens, we have a different way of looking at it than we've had in the past. Is that clear? So that's the prime thing that's got to be cultivated. You know, as well as, you know, lots, there have been lots of teachings, okay. You know, that's not going to be 100% today, is it? Because you've been working the other one for a while, haven't you? So that's the old way of doing things is your default, is what's strong. Okay, so don't expect perfection. But, you know, I'm a great believer in intention and aspiration. You know, if you know, what is your name? If Amy knows herself, and let's say in this area of her anger, or you know what, I would say Amy's got to really understand that she's aware of that in her, and she's aware of the situations that cause it. So it's not like you have to be kind of on it 24/7. It's like you kind of know her, and you know the situations, or you know the specific people. So you have a consciousness, right? And so therefore, when you're in those situations or with those people, you know, there's a self-awareness going on, right? And that this is, and that you have set in your mind the intention, I am not going to what? See, if your intention is, I'm not going to have a little anger flare up, you can't help that now, can you? Okay. So, right? So the question, the real challenge is, when anger flares up in me, can I have self-awareness and know that that's what's going on? And hopefully you will be strengthening your intention not to give vent to it in the way. Again, as you know, I mean, communication, right? I mean, do you have children? Okay, how old are your children? All right, so let's take your four-year-old. Do you work with, have you ever worked with your child, and does your four-year-old ever get angry? All right. What are you trying to do when, you know, so he doesn't hit his little sibling, right? Doesn't do, you know, you're teaching, is it to him? What are you trying to teach him? Not to hit, but you're also probably teaching him, you know, tell, you know, when you're angry, it's okay to say you're angry. Aren't you doing that? All right. All right, please use your words. There you go, Amy. Amy, use your words. All right, you know, it's like a lot of that teaching we gave four-year-olds is still very good for us, right? So it doesn't mean you got to stuff it, but it means that you have made the commitment that not to cultivate anger and not to let it come out in a way that is harmful. Right? And so part of that is your strategy is, you know, you got to have your strategy. Again, I mean, I don't know your level of anger, you know what I'm saying, and with how dangerous it is. But again, we should know these things. You know, I mean, if you really have an explosive temper because of your own causes and conditions, and it really, you know, then you should learn to what? Walk away. Walk away. You know yourself. You know, if I stay here, it's not going to be good. Right? So you walk away. You breathe. You're calm. And you know that this mind, if it keeps repeating the story, is only going to, even you walk away, is only going to keep it. So you got to... Do you get angry at your son? Yeah. Do you remind yourself he's only four? Yeah, he's doing his best, isn't he? We may think he's doing it personally, but he's not. It's just his own causes and conditions. So when you step away, you've got to calm yourself. Calm yourself through breathing, talking yourself down. You know, but also make the commitment that you will use words, and they will be positive words and constructive words, words that heal and help rather than words that destroy. And, you know, practice. You know, practice when you're alone. You know the situations, right? You know what gets you. Practice. I mean, people should all do that. I mean, we should, you know, practice for life. Especially in those areas where we know we screw up. You know, practice. Okay? I mean, if we, you know, we have good minds, and if we, you know, and if we're going to repeat things, why don't we repeat things that are going to help us and change us, rather than repeating things that only fuel the anger, right? So you have to, you know, again, addicts, chronic addicts, chronic alcoholics, stop using. And they not only have, you know, mental, emotional addiction, they also have a physiological addiction, right? So they have everything you have, but even more. But they learn, at the very least, to say no to those impulses, to use, right? It's called sobriety. If they can do it, we can do it, right? But we have to have that same understanding in terms of these really significant, poisonous types of afflictive emotions. You know, I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm just not going to do it. Shantidevan, one of his things, he says, be a log. That's his advice. Be a log. You know, a log is immovable. You know, in the face of your anger or your desire to say or do something that is harmful, just be a log. You know, if you can't say anything nice, be a log. I used to call it duct tape therapy, you know, just cover the mouth with duct tape. At least you prevent harm. We don't want to do harm, more harm. Yes?
I have a question on the other spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
Up your level, aging.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's a rift now, and I care about my loved ones, but I'm not quite sure what is there anything I can do to help them see it differently or whatever, because they're just aging and they're going, why me?
Yeah.
Saying, oh, you're a bunch of hooey, you're just up there sitting, you know.
Yeah.
In la la.
Right. They're absolutely right. But I would imagine that your hooey, la la land is a much nicer place to hang out than their place. So I wouldn't fight them. So some people do get better with age, and some people get only worse. I mean, that's unfortunately the truth. You know what I'm saying? The causes and conditions for some people, I mean, you know, the idea that somehow aging is, you know, you get wisdom and, you know, with the years you get a little more distance and a little more acceptance. You know, there was a sense that somehow aging produces a kind of a mellowing and a change. You know what I'm saying? Which I think can be very true. But we also know for some people, because of their own causes and conditions, and also people have a deterioration, you know, in their mental faculties or cognitive faculties. So there could be other, you know, and then also for a lot of old people, it's not easy. You know, they have a lot of physical challenges, deteriorations, I mean, you know. And so again, depending on the kind of person they were, if they were never very accepting or never very understanding, right, this could only kind of increase their resentment and their anger. It's sad to see. Again, you know, obviously you love them, you want to help them, you know. You know, I think it's, again, obviously, if they're open to talking about it and changing and looking at things differently, wonderful. But if they're not, you know, we don't have to. I mean, to me, at a certain point, when you have in the face of people who are always negative, for us to just be good listeners is kind of like enabling. You know, because we're, you know, at a certain point, you know, what am I supporting in this person? Misery, right? And so a lot of times with people like that, I'll say, okay, has anything good happened today? You know, just give me one thing. Anything positive today? You know what I mean? So you try to change the conversation. You know, let's talk about something else. Okay, I get it. So, I mean, we don't, you know, again, we have to kind of listen. But at a certain point, you understand that just listening, you know, like you have friends and, you know, sometimes you have friends and every time you get with them, same nonsense, right? You know, same nonsense. And it's only unhappiness. You know, they tell same stories, blah, 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 you know. It's like, at a certain point, you realize by being a good listener, you're not being a good friend because you're only supporting and nurturing their suffering. Is that, and we don't want to do that. You know, we want to end suffering. You know, so again, you know, skillfulness, how you handle it in a compassionate, wise way is often good, or should be. You know what I'm saying? But on the other hand, at a certain point, you realize, yeah, or you just start having shorter conversations with them. You know, which is also, like Shanti Davis says, right? In every situation, if there's something to do, do it. Sometimes there's nothing to do. You know, we just have to accept that that's the way it is. It's not like people want to be miserable. They just don't know better. They're just caught up in their own causes and conditions. It's sad. Yes. Listen to how smart you are. Tara, you're answering your question. I don't even know what the question is, but you hear yourself.
No.
You don't hear yourself. What did you just say?
Well, I know that there's times that I'm not ready for it yet, but how?
Yeah. Okay. And you said I keep putting myself in situations where I'm not ready.
Yeah.
You know that. You know that about Tara. Don't you? And it sounds like you have enough intelligence or perception to really see that the situation is a little dicey for you. Is that true? You know, who's driving your car, Tara? You know, I mean, that's the question. You know, we have to, you know, at some point I think maturity is, and it's not easy to grow up, is to realize I'm the caretaker for myself. You know, it's me. Right? You know, it's like a big one, you know, in growing up. You know, it's really me. You know, I'm the one who's got to make the right choices. You know, I'm the one, you know, there's nobody else going to do it for me. Because if you're somebody who always goes to other people for advice, right, what have you learned about? Always asking other people for advice. Yeah, I mean, you know what I mean, and everybody's got a different take on it, don't they? Everybody's very good at advising everybody else, but I mean, at a certain point, you realize, you know, I could take advice from people, but I'm the one who's got to live with the consequences. So I got to start taking my life seriously, and if I see, you know, there are certain situations that I just am not ready to deal with yet, right? Because I don't have whatever. You know what I'm saying? I think it's intelligent to say to yourself, you know, I'm just going to be a better caretaker of myself and not put myself in those situations until I am, you know, ready. You will know when you're ready.
Yes.
In the same way you know when you're not ready. How do you know you're not ready? Because it blows up in your face. Yeah. I mean, right? It's simple. How do you know? It's immediate feedback.
Okay? So on the positive side, it works the same way. All right? That's how you know. It's, don't make it too much up here, okay? You'll know it. Do you ever eat food?
Yeah.
How can you tell good food from rotten food? It's not like you got to think about it, do you? It's immediate, right? You take a bite, you go, what? Ooh. Or you take a bite and go, delicious. You know immediately. That's life. Right? You go into situations, you'll know. But you got to be in touch with yourself. Right? Okay. And that takes time. Last one. Why would you be angry at yourself?
Because I do not live up to certain standards that I have for myself.
Mm-hmm. You're not there. You're
other people's.
Yeah, but hold on a second. Who makes up the standards for yourself?
I do.
You do. Stop. You do. Okay. Who makes up the standards for other people? No, you do. Okay? Let's get real here. You do. Who knows what's going on in other people's heads? Right? I mean, look around a room. Do you know what's going on in people's minds right now? No. We don't have a clue. And yet we think we know what's going on. Who knows what standards people have for themselves? Do we really know? Even if they say they do, who knows? Okay. So, what you need to say, okay, you have standards for yourself. Okay? Standards, and the reason you have standards for yourself is why?
To better myself.
To better yourself. Good.
Okay. To have more understanding.
More understanding. Okay, good. So, let's say you want to be healthier in your body, okay? And so you want to run 10 miles every day. You read somewhere that that's really good, okay? You want to run 10 miles. So that's your standard. Every day I'm going to run 10 miles. But let's say you're not much of a runner. So you get up in the morning, you get on your running clothes, and you start running your 10 miles. Then what happens?
Three for sure.
Three for sure. Good. Now, what's the problem? Are you the problem, or is
the not enough?
What? Not enough training. Right. So the problem isn't, you know, you. The problem is you set a goal for yourself that's totally unrealistic. Okay? Could be a long-term goal, right? But if you're saying I conk out at 3 miles, so your first goals would be maybe to run a mile today, 2 miles today. Okay? Okay. So, this is important. You got to look at, you know, you can say, this is the kind of person I want to be. That's your long-term goal. I want to be a Buddha. How about that one? Fully enlightened. You know, all the positive aspects of my mind, fully awake. Free of all afflictive emotions. In Buddhism, that's our goal. Now, where are we right now? Okay, see? Okay. You know, see, that's so your standard, you can have that high standard as your goal, but the question becomes, if I take a realistic look where I am right now, what is the next step for me? You know, how can I take that next step that was bringing me in that direction? And that's very important, because that will produce change. If not, you'll be producing frustration, you know, or self-doubt, you know, ooh, what's wrong with me? You know, and we don't realize that we're creating that because we're going about it the wrong way. So it's important to understand we're creating the standards, and they have to be based on reality, causes and conditions, who you are right now, where you are right now, where your mind is right now, and how can you help Maria move in the direction she wants.
Okay. So just to end on a high note, before I talk about the retreat capacity. So if you've kind of wondered about Shantideva already, he says, "So like a treasure found at home that I have gained without fatigue, my enemies are helpers in my bodhisattva work, and therefore they should be a joy to me." If I've shared other things from Shantideva that you go, wow, try this one. My enemies, like a treasure found at home, they're my helpers in my awakening, and they should be a joy to me. Since I have grown in patience thanks to them its first fruits I should give. For of my patience they have been the cause. Thanks to those whose minds are full of malice, I engender patience in myself. They therefore are the causes of my patience, fit for veneration like the Dharma. Thus the state of Buddhahood depends on beings and on Buddhas equally. What kind of practice is it then that honors only Buddhas and not beings? So, you hear what he's saying here? That without, and this is a very, in what's called the Bodhisattva path, is a very key training. For most of us, we think our life would be good if we just get out all the aversive situations, all the unpleasant situations, all the unpleasant people, all the aversive people. If we can just get them out of our life, then what? Then everything will be great. I'll be happy, I'll be patient, I'll be loving, I'll be kind. If I just get all that negative stuff out. That's how crazy we are. But in the Mahayana path, the great path, we say, adversity is the path of awakening. Adversity is the path of awakening. And what Shantideva is saying here is, my enemies, which means all the situations and people who give me the hardest time, they are helping me as much as the Buddhas to awaken. Because they are what? They are exposing our shortcomings, our lack of understanding, our lack of compassion. Right? Right? If we didn't have them, we might run around thinking we're less, right? Oh, I'm such an enlightened person. I mean, I have such a good heart. I mean, there's nobody kinder than me. Right? As long as I keep my world very narrow. But we want to be able to go out in the world. We want to be able to help people. All people. And so what he's saying here is we want to be able to see and appreciate that everybody who's giving me a hard time is helping me. Going back to our first day, traffic helping me. I bow to traffic. Person in Publix who's going through their coupons and they're all outdated, you know. Helping me. Okay? And I'm just working up. But it's true. You know, can we begin? And when you see it that way, it changes everything. Changes everything. So all these things now become opportunities to develop patience, understanding, acceptance. How can we develop it if we don't have the situations that help us develop it? Right? I mean, now I've turned you into a runner. I mean, how are you going to develop running if you don't run? You know, I mean, if you can go out today and you can run a mile comfortably, and that's all you ever run. Well, if you want to develop your, you never will you? You know, but you can think you're a great runner as long as you run your mile. Right? And you'll never know your capacity, will you? Because you've settled. So we want to wake up our capacity to really be selfless beings, be compassionate beings, be understanding beings, really have the capacity to accept people as they are. Well, to do that, we have to work on it. And we, unfortunately, we can only do it with people. Right? You see what I'm saying? I mean, you can think, a lot of people think, oh, I'm practicing, I meditate on love and compassion. You know, people do these things, right? They're really wonderful on their mat. I'm just I'm sending love. You know, you run into these people. I sit on my mat, I just send love to the whole universe. Come on, come, sit down with me, let's just send love to the whole universe. Everybody in the world. Good people, bad people, you know. See what I'm saying? Isn't that wonderful? And then they go out into the world. And then you see something very different. Okay. So we have to be, kind of get real here. Okay. If we want to change, if we want to transform, we need human beings to do it. How do you learn how to love? Most people say, I want to be loving beings. Right. Amy, how do you learn to be a good mother? You have to have children, right? You know what I mean? I mean, like, you know, otherwise it's just kind of like imaginary, isn't it? You see? How do you learn to deal with people in situations like children, you know, who just don't listen to you? Right? You know, how do you develop patience and understanding? So your son is helping you. So you bow to him. And then you discipline him, but